go. I'm Mo, host of We Talk Comics, We Talk Fantasy Football, We Talk, let me see, We Talk Wrestling, we got the Mojo Show with Joe Mulvey. That's what I talk. So everybody around the room is going to go around, my other hosts on the show are going to go around for this episode of We Talk Comics. Brett's going to introduce himself by telling everybody what he talks, and it doesn't have to be in a podcast form.
Well, I talk, I think I talk comics. I think I talk fantasy football. Pretty sure I talk music, and I know I've talked movies, though not necessarily on a movies podcast.
How about you, Chris? What do you talk?
I talk comic books. I talk TV. I talk movies. The latter two not on a podcast. I have a full and complete life.
And Keith, what do you talk?
I talk comics. I talk theater, I talk movies, and I talk a good game.
I thought Keith was going to say I talk comics, and I talk comics, and I talk comics, occasionally comics.
What's a little comics to run for this?
Some comics. He likes to mix some comics into with his comics. And I realize he had those other interests. Primarily comics. All right, so this episode is going to be known as I'm Glad You Do. Of course, that title, as always, will make sense down the road. But first off, we got to get to the weekly news. Now, who's our sponsor for the weekly news there, Keith?
Our sponsor is Comicosity, the best place on the web for news, reviews, previews, everything you need for comics.
Chris, any other reasons why people should go there?
Not a one. No, it is... It's an excellent source for all your comic book needs.
Hey, Brett, what do you? Any other reasons you can think of for people to go there?
Because they have the bestest and nicest guy running the site.
And two of our hosts also do reviews on that site. That would be a person named Keith and this other fellow named
Brett. Yes.
Yes.
I knew it.
Good guess. Good guess, Brett. Good guess. So anyways, everybody visit Comicosity. Don't be a geek. Probably be a comic book geek and go there. I'm there myself on an average about twice a day. So, Keith, it's the weekly news with Cub Reporter Kid.
You caught me unawares. I'm literally on Comicosity right now. So, light week for news. It is a long weekend that we're coming off of, and as is often said, you don't launch new products in August. So, just a quick news bit. We do know, except for one member, who Jonathan Hickman's Avengers team will be. We've got Cannonball, Miss Marvel, Captain America, the Hulk, Wolverine, Falcon, Thor, Black Widow, Sunspot, Iron Man, Hawkeye, Spider-Woman, and Spider-Man, which gives us all of the movie Avengers, plus some friends.
Some friends, you say? Like, I mean, it might as well be the like half of the Marvel Universe.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. Some friends. That is. How many friends do you have, Keith?
That is a 14-member team.
Yeah, that's too many. That's too many. And how many of those were New Mutants?
That gives a Sunspot and Cannonball. There's also there is actually a mystery character as well. There's one.
Oh, thank God.
There's one in the background of the. It's a triptych. Issues 1 through 3 form one large image that shows all of the members, and there's someone in the background that looks... The costume design looks a bit like Icarus from the Eternals, but we're not sure.
Well, let me tell you, it's a good thing that they have a 15th coming, because with only 14 members, they need one more to break the tiebreaker if they can't decide between Chinese and pizza. That's too many members. It seems uninspired to me.
It's down from the number it is currently, so it's fine.
Well, how many is it currently?
All of them.
Everybody in the Marvel Universe is Avenger. Ever since Spider-Man joined, it's been a free-for-all.
I thought they were still split into different teams.
Oh, yeah, but I have a feeling that that's coming again.
Now, when did this affinity for too many damn members on the team start? Not just with Avengers, but when did it start to become a thing that just too many damn members became parts of the superhero teams? When did that take? Who's responsible for that?
Mid-70s?
You think?
Lots of people. I mean, Chris Claremont had two teams of X-Men. Even in the Avengers during like...
Yeah, that's two teams of X-Men. That's not one team that's too big. That's two teams.
Yeah, I mean, that's the last time it made sense to me, actually, was the red and gold teams. Or blue and gold, whatever they were set up as. I mean, that's the last time the X-Men lineups made any sense to me.
I'd like to blame Grant Morrison for introducing 100,000 characters of his into the JLA. Just because I haven't blamed him for anything recently.
Well, that was the concept of the Justice League Unlimited cartoon as well, is that everyone was in the Justice League and then they could call upon...
I know, you'd see in the background, you'd be seeing characters that haven't been appeared since 1932 in a comic book walking by.
Wanna Beast, anyone?
Hey, I'm a huge Wanna Beast fan. He's great. He's Bold and the Beautiful.
Bold and the Beautiful?
Bold and the Brave appearance. Bold and the Brave appearances are fantastic.
You know what, I liked him in Brave and the Beautiful. I liked him in Brave and the Beautiful, personally. So, good stuff, Chris.
All right, one more.
Any other thoughts on the team?
It doesn't surprise me that they're using all of the movie characters. That's been a theme in Marvel and DC of late, and makes a lot of sense, actually. But it does seem a little forced to have those specific characters fit together. It makes more sense in the movie when some of them come from S.H.I.E.L.D. and some of them are recruited. So it is what it is. I mean, having Hulk and Black Widow on a team together doesn't really make that much sense to me for the comic versions of the character, but it is what it is.
But how about this? I think within DC, everybody can say that the Justice League, JLA, whatever the hell you want to call them, there is their core seven, right? It's like those are the seven. Those are the seven you think of as the JLA. They have to. They should be there. You can fit in anything else around them, but the seven core characters. I think most people feel that way. Certainly, that was the basis of Morrison's run. So, does Marvel have that? And if so, who are those core characters? And how many?
Marvel doesn't have that, and I think that's the beauty of the Avengers, that you can have a Vision leading the team for several issues. Without anyone getting upset, you never have that Detroit League era that everyone refers to with the Avengers. Avengers are Avengers.
No, you don't have that Detroit League, but you know what? I'd say if you look at, say, Ultimates, it kind of gives me an idea. I mean, I think if you're thinking Hank Pym, Wasp, Iron Man, Captain America,
Thor.
To me, if you don't have Captain America or Iron Man, it doesn't really feel that much like the Avengers to me.
Yeah.
Captain America is the Avengers to me.
I'd say the difference is that the top characters that have to make up the Justice League for DC are their top heroes. I'd say for Marvel that the top characters that have to make up Avengers aren't necessarily the top heroes, but there's still a core team for each that you identify as those guys are Avengers. And those guys are Justice League, Hank Pym is a great example. Iron Man, you know.
For me, it sort of comes down to Hawkeye. Is Hawkeye around? He's the quintessential Avenger.
Absolutely, he is.
He, I mean, either with or without Captain America, as long as Hawkeye is there, Captain America's presence is felt. Thus, is the Avengers.
Thus, West Coast Avengers.
Yeah, that was the era I fell in love with them, so.
There we go.
That's where I go.
All right, we stretched out this topic. Keith, what else you got?
Well, we had a little discussion before we started recording. There's a teaser, the new Marvel Now teasers, and this one just got released. Daniel Way, Steve Dillon, the tagline is Lightning, and it has a red crosshairs across the word Lightning. So, coming December 12, we've been we're speculating amongst ourselves here before Mo joined us of what this could be. Wild guesses, Way and Dillon, which is an interesting team. I've enjoyed their work together.
Say so Shazam.
That's gotta be it.
This Marvel Now relaunch is outside the box. That is
true. Yeah, absolutely. Well, hey, look. If they did it well for once, yeah.
For once?
Yeah.
Well, with the crosshairs, me and Keith were sort of guessing a Deadpool or Punisher. But Keith came up with an interesting idea, and I think he's right. Thunderbolts is going to be the title. And, of course, by the time we get this up, we'll know.
Any other wild guesses?
None. Actually, I believe it might be Thunderbolts and have Dark Avengers spin off.
Actually, you know who I think it might be? Black Lightning.
Iron Fist.
The Thunderbolts featuring Bullseye?
Iron Fist?
No.
Lightning?
Iron Fist? No. I don't think so.
All right, Mo, you had a news story to drop in here.
Yeah, well, just because before we came on air, just shortly beforehand, we get some preview issues of different things, and I read the preview issue that we received of Black Kiss number 2, which is 10 times as pornographic as the issue number 1, if you can imagine. I believe it's I don't even know if I want to say it, but yeah, I'd say if it's 22 pages, 19 of them are graphic up close sex. It's just something else. Now, yeah, I know, and the art went to hell. So, I mean, it's certainly not worth reading, unlike the first one, which was, the art was fantastic. But the reason why I bring this up is because I asked Alpha Comics on Twitter, the fantastic store, Alpha Comics that we go to here, what do they do to display this book, which is an X-rated book, pornographic without hardcore porn, from a major publisher. And he said that on the first issue, oh, he only brought it in by subscription only. And by the second issue here, he says it's now banned and he can't get it across the border. So I just wanted to get any thoughts from you guys regarding that, because while it is pornography, that still pisses me off. Brett, let's throw to you first.
Well, I had heard that it was banned going across into the UK. I hadn't heard that it was banned coming across into Canada. But, you know, it's interesting because we've been seeing things like this before. In fact, there was last year, before I was slated to travel into the U.S., I had seen a warning come out because a lot of people are getting stopped in the border, like going across the border, and they actually recommended that you don't have any digital files on your devices too, because they can go into your digital devices and check to see if you have anything that would be considered pornographic. And I mean, a lot of cases they're talking about anime and stuff like that, where the powers that be do tend to feel that as in fact child pornography in a lot of cases. So it's insanity, and it's worrisome, because where does it go from here? I mean, I've never been stopped going across the border with comic books before, but if they do start looking at it from a greater perspective, then there's no question that they could start pulling more people over.
Chris, how about you?
I actually had trouble getting Black Kiss number 1 a trade of at one point, so it doesn't surprise me. But it's worth noting the states have some wacky pornography border laws. I mean, you can't transport porn in the states across borders between two states. So this could be just a state issue, some bureaucrat having his fun. I kind of doubt it's the border itself. I could be wrong about that. That's just my own supposition. Really, I think it's best to ignore it until it's a better book that you could make an argument that there's some reason to read. I'm actually kind of disgusted with you for reading the second one after reading the first.
Yeah, you know what? I was curious. Basically, I was curious as to how the content would be, if it would be on that same level, and it's worse. Like I say, which is amazing when you consider how graphic the first one was. But you know what? The other thing is, Chris, though, while you say to me, it's not about how good the book is. It's about whether or not I, as an adult, can choose to get it.
Oh, yeah. No, I have to agree with you there. The book was so incredibly bad that I have a hard time.
Awful.
I have a hard time summoning my anger. I agree with you on the point. I just have a little trouble with the motivation to care.
No, I know, but maybe they'll start. They'll just have to list it as being an educational book, I believe, and hope that nobody opens it up. I think that's how they get the porn across the border. It's an educational video the person has ordered, and then they just hope the person doesn't. I mean, that's who knows. Keith, what do you think about this?
It is unfortunately Canadian customs that would stop it in that instance. It's not the U.S. Canadian customs is known and has been known for a long time to stop. For example, I work with bondage photos, I don't know what rules they work under. And things that are legal to sell here aren't necessarily legal to import, which is a bit curious.
Actually, that explains some T-shirts I've had censored coming across the border.
It's troubling that. Certainly, Black Kiss did have problems getting into this country, and the UK has much stricter rules. There isn't enforced freedom of speech, for example. There's no First Amendment in Canada either, but we do have the Charter of Rights and Freedoms that does have equivalencies. It's troubling. I mean, whether the book aside, I mean, I haven't read it yet. I had a laugh when Aaron from Comicosity sent out a note to his reviewers and asked for a volunteer to step forward to review Black Kiss number 2, and I don't think anyone's grabbed it yet.
Nope.
I might have to do that for him. I don't have the time to add something else in, but I might have to do that for him because I'm the only one stupid enough to take the bullet.
I've thought about. I may still review it.
Please do, so that way I don't have to. Because the problem with reviewing is you have to put it back in your memory and remember it. I don't want to have to put the memories of Black Kiss back in my head. So
it'll be a shame though for those four people that were collecting it at Alpha.
I have a feeling those four people didn't pick up their files in the last month.
Yeah, exactly. They're like, you know what? He might be bringing that back in. I better move my file someplace else.
They're only in for a day pass. They're only out on day passes anyway. So I do find it troubling that Canadian Customs is stopping it. The incident that happened a couple of years ago was that someone had manga that had explicit content in it on their laptop. The laptop was opened, and under circumstances that were never entirely clear, whether it was opened when he closed down his computer and it would automatically pop back up, I don't know. That was never made clear of how deep they went into his files. But it was something that was interpreted at the time as child pornography. Likely it was a schoolgirl and a octopus with 8 prehensile penis, which wouldn't be an unusual
story. Yeah, I read that book.
Yeah, we've all read that book.
Chris has read it twice.
He's got the whole collection. I don't know what... Yeah, I never did find out the circumstances of how they found this file that they did. And the case was ultimately dismissed. But it did...
Well, don't they need a warrant or something? Can they just search something?
No,
absolutely
not. It's crazy. No. That is crazy. They don't need some sort of reason to believe, like, I don't know.
You're crossing a border.
If they ask you to do it, then you gotta do it.
Yeah, you can turn around and go back. And then end up on every list that there is.
Yeah.
Well, you know what? I'm not sure how they would be shipping Black Chris Kiss across, but I don't think it's a guy in his van coming. It would be shipped, proper format in the same way that they would have shipped anything else from Image. And, it's 2012, folks. I guess freedom isn't free.
All right.
That's deep.
And that's the news.
Well, I'm glad you do. What does that mean, Keith? Why don't you explain this week's topic?
Well, it's the anniversary of the New 52. And I was thinking of, I went back and listened to our own episodes leading up to the relaunch of the reboot of DC and the relaunch.
Narcissist.
I love hearing your voice in my headphones as I'm going for a walk, Mo. And also, we just went by, past the Waffles for Staff campaign, which I do feel bad for them, was not a successful campaign.
What was this campaign? And is anybody surprised it was not successful?
I think some people were disappointed it was not successful. From reports, there was very little buy-in for the mailing Waffles to DC Comics. It was an attempt by the very vocal group of fans of Stephanie Brown to bring the character back, who was retconned out and has been put on, has been benched, as they say, or has been put into comic book limbo, as I wanted to put it. Stephanie was in the Batgirl book that ran for a couple of years, and as well as being used before that. So I wrote this column because in the past year, I've heard a lot about Stephanie Brown, I've heard a lot about Cassandra Cain, I've heard a lot about characters that I haven't heard nearly enough about Renee Montoya, who is also on the bench right now, one of my favorite characters who's not being used. And ultimately, I felt like I had to finally express that I have absolutely no connection to Stephanie Brown. I had never read a single story with her in it. I had never read a single Cassandra Cain story because I was one of the DC lost readers that they were trying to get back. And they got me back. They succeeded. Batgirl now sells three times what it was selling before when it was a Stephanie Brown book. These things are not equivalent, but the book is selling, so there's no major pushback against Barbara Gordon. But part of what I wanted to express was that sometimes characters go on the bench. Sometimes they go into comic book limbo, which was a concept that Grant Morrison had in his run of Animal Man, that there was this place that comic characters that weren't being used went until someone had a new idea for them. And at that time, Mr. Freeze was one of the characters he thought was never going to be used again. And, Mr. Freeze now, headlining character in the Batman annual. Characters come and go, and, characters disappear into the ether, and sometimes characters can reappear out of nowhere, and you have no idea why someone would relaunch a solo book of Phantom Stranger, for example. It's just a process, and it's not the end of the world. Those stories still exist. All of your favorite Stephanie Brown stories are still out there.
Okay, and breathe. 2, 3, 4. Hey, Brett, can you edit that down to a tight 20 to 30 minutes?
Yeah, I'm sure I can, although it'll take some work. But
all right. Well, Keith in no way explained what this week's topic was, though he did explain his blog beautifully. Basically, Keith is saying
he rewrote his blog on the air.
Oh, God.
Feel free to just cut all that out then.
No, because it's entertaining right now. Because my line is too perfect to cut it out. Basically, what it is Keith wrote this blog saying he doesn't have any care for this character. This character has this fan base. And so we started talking about it with our buddy Comic Canuck at lunch, whose website. What's his website there, Brett?
Comicbooktherapy.com.
Comicbooktherapy.com. Brett and I were out for lunch with Comic Canuck and of Comic Book Therapy, and we were talking a little bit about Stephanie Brown, about Keith's blog, and about the amount of traffic it created for our website and the amount of comments coming in for it. And we started talking about what characters are out there that people seem to love that we don't have any affinity for, because he had mentioned Wolverine, and he's really pissed off about what they're doing with Wolverine and his origin and the rewriting of that. And Brett and I are both not caring too much simply because we don't have a great love for the character. So we started talking about what characters are maybe out there that for some reason are extremely popular or have a really hardcore fan base, but to us we just don't get, and why that might be. So that's kind of where we're going with this week. So we're glad you love them. And we're glad you all love Keith's blog. Chris, what are some? I know you are, when this was thrown out, you were like, yes, I got some things I got to get off my chest. So what are some of the characters you just don't get?
I'm going with the big one. And this is a character I have a lot of history with. Superman. they could cancel Superman tomorrow, I would not care. I mean, Superman was, I had a childhood toy of Superman that I carry around with me everywhere. I have seen every TV incarnation of Superman, with the exception of Smallville, strangely, ad nauseum, just because it was a comic book property. I have read multiple story arcs involving Superman. I've read the John Byrne Superman. I've read Death of Superman. And I have to say, I have never cared for him. I don't get what the fuss is about. And that's part of the reason I keep going back to the character. I mean, I've sat through hours of filmation Superman just trying to figure out what the hell people love about him. As soon as my mother told me Batman couldn't fly and he was a superhero, Superman was over for me. He has no good villains. He has no good fights. No, there's no one of equal power. I don't get it. I really don't get it. I would like to see him benched so somebody could come back with a fresh take in 5 or 10 years. But I've never got it. I mean, there are well-written stories, but there's, to me, there's nothing I couldn't live without.
Okay, I'm going to just bring up a couple things. Number one, and actually, unless somebody else wants to bring up a couple things based on what Chris just said. Anybody? I'm just going to throw it out there. I don't steal anybody's thunder.
Oh, I'm putting all myself right out here. I know.
And No. It's just, I think the one thing, I mean, I knew you were going to go there because I know you, right? And I know that you felt this way about the character for a long time. And you mean you've mentioned it to me in private many times. So obviously I knew you were going to go there. And then you said, I wish they could bench him for 5 or 10 years so somebody can come up with a fresh take. I don't know how you do a fresh take on Superman. I don't know how you could take, I mean.
You could do a rockin' awesome story about a blue and a red Superman and electrical powers. Oh, it'd be
well, that's just it. That's just it. Like, if you stray too far from Superman, it's not Superman. I mean, how about the fact, Chris, that the appeal of Superman, I know for me the appeal is not less the character, except for when, you know, the Ordway Jurgens burn in that era when they really made the character of Clark Kent the star and not Superman. But for me, it's just the legacy he represents. He's freaking Superman. And I just, that's the thing for me. I see that symbol, I hear that name, I hear the music in my head from the movie, and it just strikes me that that's it. That's the one who started it all. All of this that we love.
You will believe a man can fly.
You will believe a man can fly. So, I mean, that's my... I mean, for me, that's it. That Superman is more than just a character. He's a legacy for what's given me so much joy. So when I explain it to you that way, does that kind of give you any sense of him?
I get why he's iconic. It just pisses me off every time they announce a Superman movie, and I go, damn it, that could have been The Flash. I have to watch Superman again? Why isn't that The Flash? There are so many characters in the DC.
Because Green Lantern failed.
But because Superman is one of like the five most recognizable fictional characters in the world.
And I think that's part of my
Ronald
problem
McDonald
with him.
But where's the Ronald McDonald film? That's what I ask. If Ronald McDonald's in the top five, where's the Ronald McDonald feature film by Zack Snyder?
YouTube has some excellent Japanese commercials if you want more Ronald McDonald.
You know what? I'd still say Superman is more recognizable worldwide than Batman even.
I don't know what the current numbers are. I imagine it's probably pretty close.
And I think certainly more recognizable than even Spider-Man.
Absolutely more than Spider-Man.
You know? I'd say Superman, Mickey Mouse. I don't know who would be, you know, top two other than those guys.
Yeah, I know Ronald McDonald is in the top five.
Yeah, I believe it, yeah. Yeah. Anybody else have anything to say to Chris on this to try and explain it to him?
I'd say one of the things
not that I don't understand it.
One of the things that was that came out.
No, well, your exact words were, I don't get it. So that's all I'm saying.
Yeah, I understand it. I just don't get the appeal. I don't understand why he's iconic.
Keith?
I was just going to say one of the things that came out of my discussions around the blog was that the great thing about reboots and relaunches, particularly of Superman, because I've seen so many over my lifetime, is that I have no sense that I'm forever off Superman. Absolutely none. I don't care for the version they're doing right now. There'll be another one.
And isn't this the fresh take that Chris is looking for?
It is a fresh take. I don't know if it's the one that anyone's looking for.
It wasn't the one I was looking for.
No, and it wasn't for me either. But there were people that Man of Steel wasn't for, and Man of Steel to me is the great Superman origin. Man of Steel, and then the 12 issue Worlds miniseries is like that to me is the great Superman origin. But I know it's not for everyone. And the fantastic thing about Superman is that he's been rebuilt, 10 times in my lifetime. And I don't like this one. There'll be another one down the road.
Been rebuilt exactly the same way too many times.
No, I think what Mo put his finger on there with the Byrne Ordway run was that they had isolated the character as Clark Kent, who puts on a costume and pretends he's Superman. They're back right now to the old thinking that he is Kal-El, the last son of Krypton, who pretends to be Clark Kent. And that's a very, very important difference.
And even before the reboot, they had kind of started to lean, the character had started to feel in that direction, personality-wise, I felt. So probably, I don't know, I guess that's what the current powers of B believe is the best take. Much like Nicolas Cage believed, and he would have been wrong.
But they do this.
That movie would have sucked.
This happens with Batman too. There are times that Batman is seen as the character, and other times that Bruce Wayne is seen as the character. And right now, they're on a Bruce Wayne kick. You're seeing a lot more of Bruce Wayne in what Scott Snyder's doing and in the other books. You're seeing Bruce out of costume more often than you used to.
When you say it was over when you found out Batman couldn't fly and Superman could, Chris, what is the appeal? Put it down. Boil it down for me. The appeal of Batman over Superman is
that he's relatable. Superman is a god character. No one can beat him. In fact, in pre-crisis going back, I mean, whenever they ran into a story hole, he had a new power.
Superman can hypnotize you.
Yes.
It's super hypnosis.
Yes. 10 different types of kryptonite. Change them into different stuff. And I've always had a problem with that character because no one can beat him. I've never got any sense of danger. I mean, of course, anyone could be Superman if they had those powers. They want to be good. They try to be good. They are good. They are Superman. I mean, it's a noble sentiment. I just find it kind of boring.
You know what? There's a lot of characters, I think, out there right now, though, on his power level. A ton of them.
And I have to say, I don't think I really like any of them. You'd have to come up with specific examples, but...
I don't know. I don't really like any of them either. I'm not a big Wonder Woman fan. You know what? Again, I know the legacy, but I feel the same way about Wonder Woman that you do about Superman. I know the legacy. I know how important she is. But I just can't ever read stories I really get into. Not relatable. How about you? Same thing with Thor. She is hot. I would rather sleep with her than Superman. That is true. Good point, Chris. Good point. That was worth noting. Thor is another leap forward for
the feminist cause in comic books. Wonder Woman's really hot.
You're welcome. Wonder Woman's really hot. And Thor, not as hot as Wonder Woman. Another character is just super powerful, and it's just I've always had difficulty relating to.
Thor has better hair.
But not that Thor Wonder has Woman. Enemies that
Superman, yes. What's that?
Thor, as long as he's in Asgard, has characters he can beat. I don't mind that.
Yes, Superman has enough characters that can go head-to-head with him. He died before Thor.
Yeah.
There's characters. They've made characters. And they depowered him a lot. I'm not sure the current version, Keith. You're the guy to ask. Because that's another thing that Byrne stated was necessary, that Superman was just too damn powerful. And he depowered him. I mean, the guy couldn't even fly in space anymore. The current power level of Superman, what is it? Is it ridiculous again, or...
No, he's massively depowered.
He's massively
depowered. The new concept is that he doesn't have... that at the time Action takes place, which is a little over 5 years back, he can't even fly. He can leap tall buildings. That the character, the version that Morrison is writing, has the power level of the original Golden Age Superman, where he'd leap tall buildings, faster than a locomotive, but he couldn't actually fly. The suit bridged it, and then as he gets to the present day, he's, at Superman level power. But I haven't seen enough to see what Superman level power is. I mean, there was a reference in the first issue of Stormwatch to when they were trying to recruit Apollo, and said we're after someone who has Superman level power. So it's actually used as a reference for the strongest people.
Now, how much do you get the feeling that the Superman character is based off maybe the characterization of the Smallwood character? Is there any of that there, do you think?
Sorry, the
rip. Just because you mentioned a guy who you mentioned him being depowered.
Smallville.
Because he was depowered in that as well and gaining his power slowly, and that's just where I was going from that.
There hasn't, aside from Jeff Johns kind of starting to play with it, there hasn't been a functional Superboy in the comics for 25 years.
The idea that he didn't, that he's gaining his power slowly. That's kind of what I'm talking about.
I think
about.
If you're a Smallville fan, the current version of Superman is unrecognizable. So I'd kind of reject that. He's just curious. They've really removed the humanity from the character, which is why I don't care for the version right now. But as I said,
That's why I have to ask you, because I'm not reading it.
I'll see how it goes.
Exactly. So, Brett, you've been awfully quiet over there. It's time for you to jump in and tell us some characters. They could be big characters, cult characters, whatever. But characters that have a fan base that you just don't get.
Well, there's one character right off the bat just flies out at me. Written by a Calgary boy, Spawn. I don't get Spawn. I've never gotten Spawn. And I never will get Spawn. I mean, the character by itself might be okay, but it's so horribly written that I will never, ever be able to truly get why anybody chooses to subject themselves to Todd McFarlane's writing on a regular basis. It's just too ugly in my books. Another character that I do want to bring up that I enjoyed at one point, and now I am bloody well sick of, is Deadpool. It's like Lobo for Keith. You know, I liked Lobo could be in the same point. I liked Lobo at the beginning. I just don't even want to see him anymore. And Deadpool is exactly like that. I'm sick
but
of
Brett,
the
maybe
different
if they,
versions.
Maybe if they didn't get C and D grade graders on it, you'd enjoy it.
Oh, that could help too. But I don't care which creator. As long I want Deadpool to be funny, and I'm tired of Deadpool not being funny, and I'm tired of it just being regular, like, aha, we think we're funny, aha, aha.
You can't force humor. You know what? Humor has to come about organically and naturally. You can't force it into a podcast, for instance. Like, I could sit here and tell a joke right now, and I know it'd be funny, but because you guys wouldn't react like it's funny, that's why I stopped just telling them. Not that I'm bitter.
Just exactly like that.
Your boy Brad used to put in those cricket sounds and my jokes. Bastard.
He didn't add those.
That was organic. There you go. There you go. So, anybody got a reaction to either one of Brett's?
I think actually Spawn is a great character. But if he's in a poorly written book, I don't think that should really count. Because, it just matters the creative team. I think actually Spawn could be interesting. He's just not with... As long as McFarlane's in charge of his books at Image, I don't think he will become interesting.
I know spawned out the character. That character spawned out. See what I did there? See what I did by accident? No, but I know he's licensed out that character to other people to do other stories within that universe using that character as a template. and I've read some of them, and they're pretty damn good.
Yeah, so the Bendis run on, I believe it was Cursor's Bond, is really readable.
But isn't that the whole like point of this exercise in the first place, though, is this concept that one of the reasons that you know, Spawn hasn't worked for me is because I didn't like the writing, and because of that, I am less likely to attempt to engage in some other spin-off of the Spawn legacy.
I kind of wonder personally, I mean, if even people who read the book and love the book get Spawn. Talk about Superman not being relatable.
So, you know, I'll talk about... we talked about... Mo brought up Wonder Woman, and that was one of the characters on my list. Now, I have read Wonder Woman by John Byrne. I have read it by Greg Rucka. I have read it by Perez. I just can never get into the character. This has nothing to do with the creative teams. These are some of my favorite writers, and I still cannot get excited about this character.
Ditto, ditto, and ditto.
My Superman complaints are exactly the same. Excellent creative teams don't get the character.
Well, my next one might be a little controversial. I have never liked, no matter who writes it, a Big Seven Justice League book. I am not at all interested in that level of power and those characters because I know that nothing of their big character development is going to happen in that book. It is going to be nothing but a fight book. And only when characters are brought in that don't have their own book, which, you know, Martian Manhunter has always kind of filled that role, that's where the interesting characterization happens. Batman has nothing happen. Superman has nothing happen. All that stuff happens in their own books. So in general, I don't like team books that are made up entirely of characters that are in solo books as well. But Justice League, particularly when it gets to a Big Seven lineup, is nothing but characters that are have their own story happening somewhere else.
I think, though, isn't that that's what they want it to be? They want it to be it, the idea of it, the appeal of it is it's hey, what if you can get all your favorite characters in one book? I mean, that's the whole point. That's all they're doing. So yeah, it's going to be a fight book.
Action, yeah, like the GLA for Chris.
Like the GLA for Chris?
Yep.
Nice, Brett.
You really didn't land that. That absolutely didn't work.
Nothing wrong with the Grey Legs Avengers.
The Green Lantern Emerald?
No, but Chris has used that by accident. So that's why it's funny. But it's a criticism.
I'd say if we had to stop and explain it that badly.
Yeah, exactly.
All right.
Well, Brett, leave the jokes to fail to me. But yeah, no, I mean that the appeal, like I say, that is the appeal, is that it's not supposed to be character driven. It's just your favorite characters and seeing them interact with each other.
I actually have to agree with Keith. You need a Martian Manhunter someone to provide an entry into these characters.
But that's why he's one of the Big Seven.
He's not one of the Big Seven.
Sure, he is.
No.
No.
Okay, who are the Big Seven?
The Big Seven are the current members of the Justice League, Martian Manhunter not being one of them.
Who's that?
We've got Green Lantern, Flash, yep. Aquaman, yep. Superman, mm-hmm. Batman, Wonder Woman, and the Seven.
And Martian Manhunter.
It's not Martian Manhunter. It is. Come on. Someone's got to leap in with who the friggin' seventh member of the Justice League is.
Wonder Woman.
I said Wonder Woman.
He said that.
Oh. Yeah,
we've all blanked on who the seventh member is.
Well, that's why. So until you guys get it right, I'm right when I say it's Martian Manhunter.
Is it Hawkman? No, it wouldn't be Hawkman.
Not Hawkman.
Nope.
Wow, oh, this is embarrassing.
You know how you listen to those podcasts, they have to just screech everything to a halt and look up shit on the internet.
That's it. I'm right now.
I think that's the part we're at now.
According to, okay, wait, right there, right here. It's right on some thread called DC's True Big Seven Characters. Historically, we've been told by DC through their PR department, the classic JLA lineup is their biggest characters. As so, Superman, Batman, Wonder Woman, Flash, Green Lantern, Aquaman, Martian Manhunter. Green Arrow is not, if that's what you're thinking, one of the big seven. It's Martian Manhunter.
Ah, yes, which is why I blanked, because the current seventh member of the Justice League would be Cyborg. I don't think anyone would argue that he's one of the big seven. I would actually put Green Arrow before Martian Manhunter, though.
Not historically in the JLA lineup. Martian Manhunter is the Green Arrow is the rogue.
I actually agree, because I don't think Green Arrow works in the Justice League without Hawkman. And he and Green Lantern work well together, but I think he and Hawkman actually are a better dynamic in the Justice League.
Yeah, and that's the thing, is that he's like Hawkman, one of those characters who can come in and come out, but he's not one of the big seven. The big seven is Martian Manhunter is the character who's never had his own book, but is always there. Doesn't matter if Superman or Batman is, Martian Manhunter is the one who's always there. Martian Manhunter is the one, you know, friggin' Detroit. JLA. So anyways, you never liked the big seven. Well, other than that, I won't disagree. Never liked it, but
the other ones I put on my list are I have been mentioned Wonder Woman, Thor, and Lobo were the other ones I had on my list. Just characters.
Here's
that
mine.
I can never get into.
I can never. Everybody loves them, and you know what? Like I say, there's different levels. Like I say, there's cult characters who I feel like I should love, but I never got into. But then there's the big one for me, and that's not just Wolverine, it's all the X-Men. I just can't get into the X-Men. I've never been able to get into the X-Men. I liked it when it was X-Factor and X-Men. I think that was really good, especially X-Factor. Really enjoyed that. And I liked Lobdell's run in that era. I thought that was really well written. I really enjoyed it for that reason. But I've just never grabbed it. I don't understand what the appeal is to them. Why are they so relatable? I just don't get it.
I think those books have always been targeted at more of a teen audience with the whole mutant angle.
Perhaps, like, but I was, even as a teenager, I didn't get it.
Yeah, but once you hit puberty, maybe you'll start to get that.
Well, you know what? I'm not going to go there. Anybody else, though, understand? Can anybody explain them to me? What it is I'm missing?
It's funny. I was just telling the guys that I've been rereading some Claremont X-Men, and then I read one of the newest AVX tie-ins. And, you know, I'm reading stories that are 20 years apart, and I had my honest moment was, I think I just don't like the X-Men. Like, I'm not enjoying these Claremont issues, and I really, really didn't like this new AVX tie-in. Maybe I just don't like them anymore, and I should just stop trying to read them and, you know, pick up some more DC stuff that I am liking, because it's not working for me. I have enjoyed them over the years. I've liked arcs, and, you know, maybe I should just go back, grab the trades of my favorite story arcs, and leave it at that.
So that's it. I mean, for me, it's those two very short, brief periods where I was enjoying them, where I read them and enjoyed them. But even then, I never collected them myself. I just read Brett's issues. You know, anybody, Brett, can you explain the X-Men to me? I mean, you know why I love the X-Men? I love X-Men 2. That's a great movie.
I think there's story arcs I like, but I think you're just talking to the wrong crowd on this one. None of us historically have loved the X-Men.
Brett, is that true? I thought you had some love for the X-Men.
Well, it's not that I can explain the X-Men, but I definitely liked the X-Men, you know, a long, long time ago in that early Chris Claremont run. But now I don't, and I can't really get into it. Like, I keep desperately thinking to myself, I want to get into the X-Men, but I can't do it. I would love to explain to you, you know, why the X-Men are completely viable, but given all the changes that have been made to the X-Men, I certainly couldn't, and I can understand how, especially right now, how you would not find anything to really love about the X-Men.
Well, it's not just right now. It's just never. I see them being the most popular book ever. Everybody's reading them and loving them and talking about them. I just couldn't. You know what? Another character that, for me, probably because, and I could tell you why, it's because I like a more valiant hero, a more noble hero. So I'm never being a big fan of Punisher, even though I can enjoy the occasional story, just as a rule, I'll never get behind Punisher.
So I like Punisher just as the, you know, it's a bit of escapism and wish fulfillment. Like, you know, we all wish we could settle up with the bad guy. And, I grew up reading the Executioner novels, which Punisher borrowed heavily from. And just that idea of he's a killing machine. And I like where Steve Dillon and Garth Ennis went with the character. And then Steve Dillon's Garth Ennis's later run. And I like what Rooka's doing, where he's offered all these opportunities to walk away, and he's just a machine. He's on a mission, and there is no deviating from that mission. There is no enough. It's never going to be enough.
I think he's a
vengeance wish fulfillment. I mean, it's...
Yeah, and maybe that is the core of the character, and like I say, because I like a more noble character. You guys know, listening to me in this podcast, I'm just not an angry person. And I couldn't say that with a straight face.
You're a peach.
No, but I like a more noble. I probably would if he was more human, if he was closer to breaking. And softening in some way and having to face that dynamic, I'd probably find him more interesting than what they tend to do with him. So, but again, that would probably go against the core of the character. It'd be like making Superman, I don't know, red, blue, stuff like that.
I've historically hated the Punisher. I even don't like the Garth Ennis run, although I have learned to appreciate it for what it is. I have to do say... This current run with Rucka is the first time I think I've truly enjoyed him since the first limited series.
Okay. I think we need to move on from this topic unless anybody has any other ones you want to... Chris, did you have another one you need to get off your chest?
I just want to say it's time to bring back Aztec.
I love that.
See, now this is the opposite topic, though. This is a character This is a character that absolutely no one ever got behind. And you don't understand why.
I love to ask that. I love that. There was Morrison that I enjoyed there. Oh, man. But okay, I'm just going to, before we do, because we had another mini topic there. Keith, I think we're going to have to skip again this week. But I just have one last one before we move on to the Wii views for the week. And just throw this out there for you guys. Based off of this, is the success of Spider-Man... that Peter Parker is the single most relatable character in comic book history. Brett, what do you think?
Well, Angus apparently wants to speak up on this
Angus
subject.
Angus is going
to,
of course, it's not a We Talk Comics if Angus doesn't weigh in at least once.
That's right. I definitely think that Peter Parker is extremely relatable. I mean, a goodly chunk of comic book fans are male, and I think the vast majority of them
Most of them.
Yeah. I think the vast majority of us started when we were that age or younger, and so I think that you see that kind of school-aged person, and you realize that it's the kind of thing that a radioactive spider could bite you, no question about it. But it's just the other things that he, like the trials that he goes through, are definitely different than the trials that Superman would go through, and that makes him far more relatable than a character like Superman. And, you know, by himself, Batman, Bruce Wayne is not that relatable because, well, he's rich.
I think that Bruce Wayne's not relatable, but Batman is, as Chris was talking about. That's the non-powered guy in a super-powered world.
Yeah.
You know, Captain America's a character that shouldn't be relatable to me based on everything we're talking about, and yet I find is. Probably, again, because I just look at the legacy of the character, and I'm awed by that, much like Superman. But I think also
with Captain America, I mean, it's just because he's just a good man.
Yeah, that's exactly it. That's the thing, and so is Superman, and I appreciate that more than the Punisher. I think that's something I gravitate towards. I always just appreciate a good man. As I said in Kingdom Come, there's a right and wrong in this world. There's a right and wrong in this world, and the difference isn't that hard to tell. You know? I mean, now, that's the line, right? To me, that's the line that sums up Superman better than any line in the history of comics.
Just out of curiosity, how do you feel about the Captain America that's in the Ultimate Universe where he's more of a soldier?
You know what? He's not as likable, but it's a different universe, so it's okay. He fits in that universe. If they took him and if they made the Captain America in the 616 universe, that personality, I wouldn't like it. But because everybody has its different personality, it's just a harder edge universe, and he's fitting into it, I'm okay with it. I quite liked him there. So, again, he was probably more human there because he was more flawed. But then again, I don't necessarily want my Captain America or my Superman to be flawed. Like I say, and that's the thing about Spider-Man. And I guess that's why you have to take away the marriage, because when he's married to Mary Jane, he's not as relatable. When he's always doing his best but never seems to get ahead, when he's always broke, when his aunt is always sick, when he's always feeling responsible, when he always has enough, never has enough time, that's when he's relatable, when he's a bit of a geek.
Now, just to quote you, didn't you want to say, fuck May Parker?
I hate her. And
yeah, we need her to have Spider-Man. Is that your supposition?
No. She's an entire spectrum that I'm bringing up. I'm just saying. I think it's time for her to die because she's, well, time for her to die. But the same thing is, I also didn't want him to break up his marriage with Mary Jane. I still want him married. On the other hand, I understand what they did it, and I understand why she's brought back, even though I personally wouldn't agree with it. All right. Well, let's move on to the reviews.
Here I come to save the day.
We're saving you.
Brett, open up.
From Bad Comic.
Oh, yeah. Oh, damn right we are. Brett, you're opening up.
I'm opening up. Let's get this out of the way quickly before something bad happens. But all right. I'm going to open up. This should be good and fast. I'm going to open up with Damsels number one. Which is the only reason that I am not going to say that this is probably the number one contender for the Wee Talkies of worst comic book of the year is simply the fact that I had absolutely no expectations for it to begin with. You know, a bunch of random female characters in a random fantasy story. And it hops around like mad, making virtually no sense at any given moment. The only thing that I can pull from it is they use the word vertiginous within it. And I thought that was apt because that's pretty much how I felt throughout the entire book. This book is horribly written, poorly drawn, and it's just a big steaming pile of shit.
I know. Really? Because I felt raped when I was reading this book. You know what? It's bad.
I hope you said craped, because that's a little much.
No, I did. I felt raped when I was reading this book. It was awful. You know? It was awful, man. It's a bad book. I don't think the art is as bad as Brett said. I think talk about not relating to any characters. Talk about a setting that isn't very comfortable, just boring and unlikable. Talk about it being too goddamn wordy. Talk about it. How did that character show up? How did she get there? I don't know. I got bored really quickly in this. It was awful. Chris, what do you think?
I blame Neil Gaiman for this shit, man. He created a story using a classic fantasy basis that was wonderful, but he was a good writer. A good writer should have came up with a better setting, a more original setting, so people don't come along and try to ape him with this crap. I mean, just having the stupid fairies and the fantasy market, I mean, it's cliched. It should have been drummed out of literature long ago, but we have this one good story, so other people think they can ape it, and it doesn't work. And I mean, at least we could have a better setting or something. I mean, I was reading this thinking, man, I wish I was reading ElfQuest right now. At least that's a good fantasy setting that's somewhat original. There was nothing to this book. It was badly written characters in a familiar setting that I didn't like in the first place.
You know, I hope you said that they were aping Neil Gaiman, because otherwise it's a bit too much.
I would actually argue that they're even more so aping Fables, which is a good book that takes those characters.
And... aping, Brett, or the other word?
No, aping.
Craping.
Oh, okay.
Craping, yes.
I'm sorry, Keith. I didn't mean to offend you. What's your crepes. Review? I love crepes, too.
I had to start reading this book out loud because I like doing a Cockney accent, and and having it written phonetically for me was a joy.
Oh, wasn't it? Yeah.
What? Oh. Oh, this is an unpleasant read. I'm gonna give this a do not buy, thumbs down, move on.
In fact,
what did you think it did to you? Is really the real question.
Made of meat crepes?
Yeah.
I think our recommendation on this one is if you see it on the shelf at your comic book store, tell them to send it back.
And tell them to send it back.
I'm actually going to say best book of the week just because I want a pull quote. and I don't think anyone else is going to give a positive review.
That's Chris from now on. It's just going to throw in a quick... The reason why just every review into it. The reason that comics exist.
We need more damsels in this.
Yeah, I'm gonna tell you if you read it, wear protection because it's awful. Keith, let's give yours. Do something good.
All right. Well, let's talk about the number zero this week. We'll cover. The 0 month all in one big go, but we've got the debut of The Phantom Stranger by Dan DiDio and Brent Anderson. And I really dug this. I think it took a little while to get going. It was replaying some of the stuff we saw in the Free Comic Book Day last May that was done in a shorter length of time in the Free Comic Book Day version. But I was interested in the take. I like the idea. It almost feels like two stories because it tells the origin and then it says, and then in the modern day, and we get like a whole, like a little sub-adventure. So it's kind of a neat way to start it off that it's not a full-on origin story. It's an origin story and then sort of a second origin story of a different character. I think probably the thing that really sold me on the book was Brent Anderson's art. It is what I hoped it would look like. It looks like a 70s book. It has been, I looked it up, it's actually been 35 years since The Phantom Stranger had his own book. It was the mid-70s, so in the time I've collected comics, Phantom Stranger's never had an ongoing. I'm in to keep trying this. I know this is going to be a key book in what's coming up in DC. I'm interested to see how this fits into everything, how they fit together the other characters that appear in this book, Pandora and Question, and then the surprise one that I don't want to give away because it's the last couple of pages. Though it was probably on Twitter every second thing that gets tweeted about this book.
I'm going to be giving it away, Keith, just so you know.
All right.
You may not want to, but I'm going to. So.
Okay, well, that's my review. I enjoyed the book quite a bit.
Yeah, this book ruled, had Spectre. I've been waiting for Spectre, and it was great. It was great Spectre. Man, it was Jim Corrigan's Spectre, the Spectre I want. Man, it took me back to my roots. I really enjoyed this book. It was a pretty book, like you say. But, yeah, I mean, Phantom Stranger, another character who's, like, totally not relatable. So I'm not into this at all. I'm not into this. And I'm like, wait, that character is Jim Torrey. And I just let him, like, I just have to read a little more, and he'll show up more, and he'll become the Spectre. And he does, and it is awesome. Keith, wouldn't you say it was awesome when Spectre showed up?
That was pretty cool. I did, like, when they brought in Jim Corrigan, you're like, yeah, I wonder where they're going with this, because... They teased, I think it's in the Free Comic Book Day that they teased, no, it's in the backup story that was in Justice League 7, that they teased the Spectre had said, Basically, you know, he says to Pandora, if you're not careful, I'm going to stick the Spectre on you. None of us want that.
Yeah. It's great. Great.
Like the character that the Phantom Stranger and Pandora are terrified of.
Exactly. Chris, your thoughts?
This is just a good read. I enjoyed it as well as you guys. The one thought I had while reading this is, how does this tie in to the origin originally presented in the pre-52 origin in Secret Origins, which I think I saw Keith tweet something about. I'm not sure if it correlates exactly, lines up exactly, but it has enough continuity that I thought, hey, this is my Phantom Stranger, and I enjoyed it greatly.
I'm going to go out on a limb and say that you've read that Phantom Stranger origin in the Alan Moore trade paperback, didn't you?
Yes, I have.
That's right.
But I read it originally as well, but that was years ago.
If you read it in the Secret Origins, you would have read the other three origins that are completely incompatible with the one that Alan Moore wrote. The concept of that issue of Secret Origins was that we're finally going to tell the origins of the Phantom Stranger, which has never been told. And what they published was four separate stories that are all completely incompatible origins. And said, well, one of these might be right, but probably not.
I remember that. That was really good. That's really good.
That's a great book.
Yeah,
that's a great book.
I love that.
Yeah.
I did read the original issue as well, and I just happened to pick that Alan Moore one as my
favorite. Yeah.
So
none of them were actually they were never non-canonical, but they were never canonical either. They're never part of continuity or not part of continuity, because they basically have never they've never again pointed to one of those as being his origin. This is the first time they've had a full-on.
I wish they've done it more.
Yeah, so this is the first time they've had a real, a full-on origin of the character that they're going to go forward with, it seems.
And, Brett, what do you think?
I really like the art. I thought the book... I like the fact that they took an origin from Moore's book, because I love the Moore's Secret Origin. To me, it really just seemed like a glorified excuse to bring in the Spectre, and that's about it. I thought it was a good book. It wasn't my favorite book, but it was a good book.
It probably was a glorified excuse to bring him in, Brett. I gotta say, because I mean, as I'm reading it, I am sitting there going, really, is having Phantom Stranger Zero going to have higher sales than putting the Spectre Zero on the cover? It just doesn't seem to me that's possible. And Spectre's certainly more popular. I mean, hiding it like that, I thought that was a strange choice.
Yeah, I mean, it was, it definitely, at the end, it really seemed like almost more of a Spectre
book. It's more of a Spectre book than a Stranger. Yeah, it really is. Probably why I loved it. Also, the Spectre was in it. Spoiler alert. Chris, you had a last statement on it?
I actually just wanted to... ask Keith, because while I lost interest and I was extremely mad when the Captain Marvel or Shazam backup stories started, the Council of Wizards in this book, does it appear in the Shazam book anywhere? It seemed to me that there was was something about that. I thought Shazam, the wizard Shazam, was sort of missing from the council, and
I don't remember the
New 52.
Before Keith answers, I'm just going to say my guess is, because I thought the same thing, Chris, and then I took another look, and I don't think there is, but now we'll know for sure. Keith?
No, they haven't. The only time that this council has appeared is in the Free Comic Book Day issue, which played out the same scene of the three of the Phantom Stranger, Pandora, and Question being doomed to... Their various punishments on Earth. And this actually in the Free Comic Day, I don't believe they were referred to by name. This calls them the Council of Wizards. There's one of them that I noticed this in the Free Comic Book Day, and I again in this, they're not named, but one of the characters really looks like Black Bison, a character from the 1980s Firestorm comic.
Yeah, good point.
So I'm curious how they play out these characters.
Well, I mean, I'm wondering if these characters show up again.
Yeah, well, I imagine that, I mean, they're tying all this stuff together, so I imagine that they'll roll this stuff either through Phantom Stranger or some of the stuff coming up in Justice League, maybe. Certainly, we'll see Pandora soon enough.
Chris, save us from in the next book. I hope it didn't crepe you.
I'm Scotty Young to the Oz universe. This is a group of books that I have been reading, and I suggested it for review just because I want to see your takes on it. This is a book I've been enjoying, and I believe this is an introduction to all of you. So how fresh is it? I enjoyed it greatly. I can't wait to see what happens. Little disappointed in this issue that there's not more fantasy characters introduced as of yet, but this is more of, I want to hear what you guys have to say.
This is a wonderful, charming little book, Chris. I'm glad you threw it up there. I definitely feel like I've missed something not reading these earlier. The art, the characterizations, all of it. I mean, I'm reading it. I'm going, is this made for kids? Is it made for adults? Would kids even like it if it is made for them? Who cares? Because I'm loving it. It's charming as hell. Keith, what do you think?
I really, really enjoyed this. Over the summer, I found out that a couple of my nieces have become comic readers. And when this is collected, this is getting mailed to my 11-year-old niece. I thought it was just wonderful. I'm a fan of Scotty Young's art. I haven't seen that much sequential art. I follow him on Twitter, and he posts tons of stuff. And then he does those variant covers at Marvel. It's just a lovely book. It's a cute book. I kept smiling as I was reading it. It's wonderful.
Brett?
Well, it's a good, fun read, and the art is absolutely amazing. Like, I hadn't read it until just quickly before the podcast, because I wasn't going to, but Keith had mentioned that it was a pretty light read, and that the art was good, and I was blown away. Like, the art's amazing, and I totally dug the story. It's very, very good.
I was late onto this book, and I read one issue of the last story arc and immediately went out and got the trades.
It's good. Big thumbs up all around from us, Chris. Yeah. Good one to throw out there. Why don't you give us another one while you're on a roll?
This one I'm actually going to have the same review as last week, but I'm going to throw out New Crusaders number one. This is a reprint book of the New Crusaders that was originally published in 8-page story arcs through the Red Circle app and digitally only exclusive. And I have to say this book is a good read, but not one I'd cross the street for. So if you're just looking for a cheap book to sort of fill out your file that this week or your pull list this week, pick it up, but I don't think you're going to be missing anything if you don't.
You know what? I liked it quite a bit, Chris. I liked it quite a bit. I thought it was like not that into it, getting more into it. By the end, I'm like, good story, good, fun story. It's really, yeah, I mean, it's just an enjoyable read. I think very much something that I think this is what I want for my superhero books, really, for my books in general. I just want to sit back, enjoy it, feel like everything means something, but like it's not too damn serious. Like, you know, everything has some consequences. It really means something, but it's not so much that it's, you know, trying to bend my mind sometimes. This is a really good book for me.
Funny you mention that. I actually read it in eight-page story arcs when it originally came out digitally. Mm-hmm. I've never actually read it back-to-back like you have in the print form. So maybe I should give this one another read.
Maybe, yeah. I enjoyed it. Brett, what do you think of it?
I thought it was a solid book. You know, it was... It did seem to go together. I think I think maybe you can see the 8-page reads in it in the fact that the first 8 pages maybe aren't that exciting. The second are a little bit more so, you know, and so on and so on. So overall, it was solid. I, again, like Chris, I'm not going to run across the street for it, but you know, it's worth a read.
And Keith?
I didn't like it.
Oh, that's too bad.
It was clunky. It had 8,000 characters. I've never dug the little labels next to characters.
That was troublesome. That was tough.
I like that. When I'm not familiar with them, tell me who the hell they are.
Doesn't tell me anything about them though. Like, this is the mayor's son. I'm like going back. Like, who is the mayor again? Why does it matter that this is his son's second cousin?
It helped me a lot.
I mean, the Legion of Superheroes does that, and I've never liked it there either. To me, it's a sign that you've got too many characters if you have to label them like that. So it wasn't for me.
Well, all right. Give us another one then.
All right, well, let us do Guarding the Globe. Guarding the Globe is part of the Invincible universe. This one's by Phil Hester and is a government team, kind of a S.H.I.E.L.D. or Avengers-type team. And I quite enjoyed this. I've never read Invincible, actually. I've never read any of the books in that whole family. I'm now, 150 comics behind, if I want to catch up?
Yeah, something around that.
It's a bit overwhelming. It's almost as overwhelming as Fables, which is about 170.
More.
good. I'm glad the jump on point was.
It's probably closer to 200 with everything. So yeah.
Yeah, by the time I catch up. So really, I like the book. I was actually more interested in the kind of pseudo villain. Best Tiger was my favorite character in the book, who I guess is the bad guy. I couldn't really tell.
Everyone. No, I think he's one of the good guys.
Yeah, it was hard to. He's kind of an anti-hero, I guess, because it's hard to tell from his behavior which side he's on. But that was my favorite character. I loved his dialogue. So I enjoyed this one. I'm now going to go out and buy 14 trade paperbacks to catch up.
Well, you know what? I didn't realize this was part of the Invincible universe, and I kind of have almost the exact same reaction. I'm not too sure about this. And by the end, I'm like, damn, that was good. Damn, that was just a fun superhero book. Sometimes I just want that. Just, you know what? It's volume 2. I'm definitely picking up the trade paperback in volume 1. All the Invincibles, it's a little scary. Now that you told me that, a little scary. But volume 1 for sure. I can't. I'm running out and getting it right away. I really enjoyed this. Brett, what do you think?
Well, I've read the first 2 trade paperbacks of Invincible, and I really like the book, at least from those first 2 trade paperbacks. I don't know that much about these characters ultimately within it. So for me, it felt like I was missing something because I knew little tiny, tiny little threads, but I didn't know enough. So I think that this is one of those cases where I was just like, I didn't particularly enjoy it upon this read, but given how much I like Invincible from the start, I feel like...
You also liked Invisibles. Like that.
Oh, I love the Invisibles too, yes. But given how much I liked Invincible, once I catch up to that point, I feel like I will like this book. I'm not there yet.
Might have been better off not knowing anything about the characters than having just a little knowledge.
I actually feel like, I think that might have been the way. Like, you either have to know all about them or nothing.
Chris, what do you think of it?
Loved it. I'm a huge fan of this entire universe. I thought the first volume of this was actually the best stuff from the universe. This is the first time Paul Hester has taken over the characters. Phil Hester has taken over the characters, and he did a commendable job. I don't think it's as strong as the first volume, but still a damn good fun read, and that's sometimes just what you need. There's not enough fun book superhero books out there that you don't have to worry about tons of continuity. I mean, Brett could follow the story even though he hasn't read anything in 75 issues. You guys didn't seem to have a problem. This is what comic books should be to me. It just huge smile on my face, lots of fun, a lot of fun characters.
Yeah, I think this is a good week, and I think this is book of the week. And considering I think this is a good week outside of the one that creeped me, you know. Brett, we got any more to review?
No, that's it.
No Johnny Thunderbolt or whatever the hell it's called?
Oh, yeah. Peter Cannon. Jeez.
Peter Cannon, Thunderbolt, and you thought I talked a lot.
Yeah. Good Lord. You know what? It's amazing. When I every now and then you read a comic book where you went, you know what? If this was a prose book, it would be too long. Like, that would be this book. Where did they find time for the art? Which is really beautiful art. But good Lord, was this boring. Oh, my God. So much words. Chris, what do you think?
Didn't read it.
Oh, Brett. Brett, what do you think?
Well, for me, I only just think that that I question perhaps that the character is just too old and therefore still stale, because there's really just not a whole lot of, like, really get interest in this character anymore. I'm like, I think that you should just stay back in the 1940s or whatever and just stay there.
Well, you know what? Here's the thing. If you read every single page, and I gave up because it was so many words.
I did read every single page.
Yeah, no, if you started reading it in 1940, you'd be getting it now. You'd be just finishing the book now.
Yeah, pretty much. It took me the better part of a day. Yep.
Oh, my God.
I brought a lunch.
Keith, what do you think?
It is really a pity for this book that Batman Odyssey came out this year, because it's still not going to win the most words per page, but it gives it a run for its money. It's a rough one. This guy likes to chat, and he likes to chat about anything that crosses his mind.
Yeah.
And that's what podcasts are for.
Exactly.
Yeah, the Thunderbolt podcast, it's still going on.
What was longer, Brett, the this book and the word balloons here, or Keith describing the subject that wasn't describing the subject this week?
Oh, no, it's still this book.
Okay.
this book is at least three Keiths combined.
I think when you go back and listen to it, Mo, it only feels that long.
Keith, I think when you go back and listen to it, you'll be like, oh my God, I really went on here. It's all right. It's all good.
Like, but all my fans, I treasure my words.
Let's do our plugs, Keith. I'm giving you a hard time, so you go first.
All right. Well, my blog.
You wrote a blog?
My blog, I don't care.
Tell
about
us about it.
I don't care about Steph Brown, but I'm glad you do. Was very, very popular on the weekend when it went up, and still getting some comments, some great weighing in from Paul O'Connor, Longbox Graveyard, jumped into the conversation. Really good discussion on continuity, on characters. I'm very happy with the responses I got. I am reviewing for Comicosity, and I may still throw my hat in the ring and review that Black Kiss number 2. We'll see how it goes. And you can reach me by email, keith@wetalkpodcast.com.
When you read that book, you really do want to wear protection. It's not even...
It's going to...
Oh, my God.
If I read like two or three issues in a row, will it gang crepe me?
It will. It'll be a gang crepe.
And you can follow me on Twitter. Nice. and get all of my words of wisdom in 140 characters at a time. Cub reporter.
It's amazing that this guy is able to. You don't even use that tweet longer. It's amazing.
That's right.
And that's why Keith has 10,000 tweets plus.
That's right. I think I'm at like 12,000.
Wow. Chris, what do you got?
I'm Chris at We Talk Podcasts, Chris_WeTalk on Twitter. I should have a blog up about the second volume of Albert Pyatoun any day now. It's been lost in the ether that somewhere. I've promoted this one before.
I'll put it up soon, I promise.
All right. Also, this week I have listened to Longbox Graveyard for the fifth time. the last episode that we have up there is phenomenal. It's on digital distribution, and he's talking about some stuff that I personally am going through. If you haven't listened to this episode, do so. Long the Box Graveyard has to be one of the smartest men I know talking about comic books. Touches me every episode. If you haven't listened to it, listen to it.
Absolutely. It's nice that we have that comic book, the Long Box Graveyard comic book podcast, as a counterbalance to us for the dumbest guys talking comic books.
All at once. Hey, I like the Mojo show almost as much as I do Long Box.
There you go. It's a different dynamic, that's for sure. And Brett, what do you got?
All right. Brett _ We Talk on Twitter. Brett at WeTalkPodcast.com. Reviewer for Comicosity. Though I can't decide what the hell to review this week. Probably not Damsels. Maybe I will, though. 1 out of 10. But otherwise, busy with We Talk Fantasy Football. It's been taking up a little bit of my time. So once things start to settle in normally, then I'm sure more stuff will start coming around.
That's right. That's right. I'm Mo at We Talk Podcast. M-O, no E on my name. Or Mo _ We Talk. M-O, no E on that one either. Simply Mo. And listen to the Comic Podcast Network or visit them. Check out some other comic book related stuff. I really love doing this show. This is great fun. I'm going to take this time to announce and kind of surprise the guys here that I'm going to step away from the podcast for a while. Just to concentrate on some other things. So this will be my last We Talk Comics, but it has been great fun. April Fools!
Yes! You totally yes! got me. You totally
yeah,
got
you
me.
Yeah, you nailed that one.
Oh, I was awesome. I was tearing up. I was
Fools, bitches! Oh, I love that. Anyways,
I thought we'd have to reboot.
Just my April Fool's joke.
I was excited, but
with the December, with the
yeah,
big,
you're
the
getting
big,
excited.
With the big,
I am looking forward to it. Apparently, we're going to be doing the Red and White Club show, and the hope is to talk to artist Scott Kowalczyk. We're hoping to go for dinner for him afterwards and record our dinner conversation as a live audio commentary podcast. That's the next big project we got going on here. That's going to be a lot of fun, so hopefully we can hook that up with him. And other than that, I should really go check to see if that box of educational videos I had shipped to me from the States is what it's supposed to be. So I think we're OUT.